from the corner. Yes! And a foul!
Is he having himself an afternoon? Schweiger feeling.
His third three already.
On the drive goes Patty Casey for the basket.
Backdoor cut. Schweiger with the jam. This is Schweiger in close. And one.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to episode 12 of the Cole Schweiger Show with your host, Patty Casey.
I like that.
Introing this week. My co-host here, Cole Schweiger, just, I guess a couple hours ago, wrapped up a good interview with Noah Gray of the Kansas City Chiefs. I was unfortunately not able to join the interview, given that it was during my work day, and it is a weekday, so I had to sit this one out. It's pretty unfortunate. I was sad. I know you guys are probably devastated to hear I wasn't on it. But Schweiger and Noah go way back. They're AAU teammates from back in the day. So I'm sure it went really well. I actually haven't listened to it yet. I'll listen to it tomorrow to see what cuts and everything. I'm sure there's not many cuts. Schweiger said it was great.
Yeah, man. It was a great interview. Noah's just such a class act, man of God, and has really taken the – I mean, no one's taking the easy route to get where, but he's really taking a route that not a lot of people want to take. Like,
right.
I keep on we learn this every week with just different guys, but I mean, Noah talks about driving 12 hours in a car with his dad to go to different elite camps, to go to North Carolina, to go to Duke, to go to Appalachian State, he went to Boston College three times. They never offered him. His transition from being a quarterback to a tight end, and how coaches didn't want to recruit him as a quarterback, so he had to be a tight end. So I think his story was amazing. He comes from a great family. I've known Noah since we were in seventh grade, played against him for a while, and got to be teammates with him for AU Nationals in Orlando, Florida, Patty. So,
yep.
So great guy. We go way back, and just super hard worker and killing it with the Chiefs right now.
Yeah, it's also very cool for our listeners because as basketball fans, as sports fans, I'm sure they have a lot of close friends that they grew up with playing basketball or playing different sports, and then you kind of just find your own way. So most of them probably don't get to the Lakers and the Kansas City Chiefs, but it's pretty neat that, you know, you guys still have that relationship, and we're very appreciative of him coming on. It's also very relevant with the times right now because this, I mean, month and a half, like last week was obviously with Thanksgiving, we recapped how big football was. NFL's kind of winding down. College football's obviously ramping up with bowl season and everything, so very relevant guest. Appreciate him coming on. Appreciate you getting him, Schweiger.
Yeah, man. Obviously, we have Noah called in the podcast little kid jobs. Well, you are working at 9 to 5.
Yeah, so well.
I'm just appreciative that Adam could get on and help us out and obviously accommodate both our busy schedules. I'd film like
right
10 minutes after I got off the interview with him. So It was a great interview with him, and excited for you guys to hear it. Obviously, yeah. After this intro.
Very excited. Yeah, shout out. I didn't mention that at the top. I'd be remiss not to shout out Adam Lewis. He's got a busy schedule, Schweiger. People may not know.
Time.
Adam's still a student at Syracuse. Yeah. He's a junior at Syracuse. He's in Newhouse.
Student.
He's killing it. Very, very tight schedule. Very rigorous schedule. He's also the best podcaster probably in the world. Producer in the world. So.
Oh, unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Yeah. So shout out Adam. We never say that enough. But I think first thing, we're recording this on Monday. Last night was Sunday night. You guys are very hot right now in LA. And in particular, Anthony Davis played probably the best game of anyone all season in DC last night. So I know you weren't there, you're still not traveling, but I'm sure you were tuned in. That was pretty unbelievable.
Yeah, it was great to see him do that. I mean, obviously seeing him in training camp, seeing him in the summer, you see his natural talent. You know what I mean? And the only thing that people have to say about him is that it's his injuries. You know what I mean? And which is so unfortunate because, like, when you look at his production, what he does on a night-to-night basis, it almost seems like he was just working himself into shape, and now he's in shape, and he can do this on an every-night basis. I mean, you look at his last 8 games. Those are historic.
Yeah.
Historic numbers. Historic numbers. 55-17 last night, shooting like 72% from the field, totally dominating the game on both offense and defense, blocking shots, getting rebounds, like affecting the game, throwing that outlet pass to LeBron for basically a game-sealing dunk. It's just like every part of the game he was affecting, and he was obviously just just a monster last night. So, I mean, him and LeBron are just clicking on a whole nother level right now. I think our role players are doing a really good job of playing with those guys, being there every single step, and just trusting the process. I think Coach Ham's doing a great job. So it's been amazing to see. Just see us kind of come together as a team. And when you're behind the scene with those guys and see how hard they work every single day, see the commitment to the craft and the grind, and even when you're 2-10, still coming in the next day and putting in the same focus as you did when you win 8 out of 10, it's just it's really inspiring, and it's been a great experience.
Yeah, I saw he won a Player of the Week this week in the Western Conference, which was basically a no-brainer for whoever decides on that award. I think that was probably unanimous. He averaged like 37 and 13 for the week. So
outplayed Giannis.
Yeah,
outplayed Giannis that was in the Bucks.
Yeah, that was the next game I was going to go to. That was like an early game of the year candidate. It was just like Giannis, AD, LeBron, like all just clicking on all cylinders. The role players got going. It was very back and forth.
Russ diving on the floor, getting that loose ball, and
prime time game. It was awesome.
AD called it like a heavyweight matchup, and even Giannis after the game posted on Instagram, like, it's always great to play against the best, and it truly was. Like, watching that game, it gave me chills. It's like I texted Scotty mid game. It's like, yo, like, we look like we like figured this thing out. Like, I'm not trying to be like too soon kind of guy.
No, I completely agree.
But to see Russ out there clicking with LeBron and AD and the end of game execution back to back, 3 games in a row, like, it seems like we're starting to figure it out, and these guys are really starting to gel. So, I mean, I can't wait till hopefully I'm involved in that.
Yeah, our guy Austin's playing really well too. He's finding his groove. Like, he can play with any lineup.
Oh, he's unbelievable. I mean, he, like, it's funny. Like, me and him play really well together because our skills like, match. And
super complimentary.
It's super complimentary that he can go play with LeBron and AD and cut off those guys and get those guys shots. And I don't know if you saw his game where he got mic'd up.
Yeah.
Hilarious.
I was dying laughing. Yeah, he's hilarious. Who was it? Was it Shane Sharp, or he's like, "What's up, man? Good talk." Yeah.
Yeah. How you doing? Whoever, good talk. Yeah.
Whoever the dude it was just didn't respond.
Yeah. You know, that's awesome, though. He's just such a fun-loving kid. Like, doesn't take anything too serious. Just, like, and he's, like, we've talked about, like, these kind of guys before. It's like, they can just go out and play and, like, not worry about the results. Like, just be so in the moment. And it's just so natural for guys like him, Colin Gillespie. Like, it's just so natural for those guys to just go out there and do it. I mean, unbelievable.
So, I don't know. There's a lot of athletes that envy that mindset, because a lot of people can get so in their head, and you could tell Austin's just playing pretty free at all times. He also plays his ass off every single game. But you kind of mentioned you guys finding your groove. It's pretty incredible having the start you guys had, being 2-10. It's like everyone on the outside, it's like the sky is falling. And then, I don't know, 3 weeks later, you guys are basically, I don't know, 80%, winning 80% of your games since then, back to 10-12. Like, you're right in the mix here.
I think the best piece of advice that I've ever gotten, well, at least in my time in the NBA, is that after the first preseason game we played, we lost by, whatever, like 25 to the Kings. I played pretty well, and I was like, put my
10 spot off the bench,
just quick 10 spot. But after the game, like, they're like, yo, why are you upset? I mean, oh, we just lost. Like, my group let up the lead. It's like, yo, we have like 100 more games left.
Yeah, literally.
100 games. Like, so you can't evaluate yourself. Like GMAC just say all the time, don't evaluate yourself to the end. Like you could win 12 games in a row and then lose 6. And then you go win 8. And then in the NBA, if you win 45 games, that's a really good season.
Yep.
Like, you're in the playoffs, you're fighting. So I just think that when the Lakers are doing bad, it's going to be all over the place. Like,
yeah.
In terms of the media, and then, like, right now, AD's the best player in the world, and he might have a game where he doesn't shoot well, and then it's gonna be
the same way. Yeah.
So I mean, it's just amazing to see those guys, see how they work, and how that stuff doesn't even affect them.
Yeah. I guess transitioning here, we're gonna dive into our mailbag question of the week. This will serve as sort of a segue. We're talking about AD, his unbelievable performances. This question is from Adam, not our producer Adam, but a listener Adam. So shout out Adam. He says he's a big fan. Swider, thinking back on your time in college, is there one individual performance from an opponent that you think stands above the rest?
Yeah, man. I remember when I was a sophomore at Villanova, we played at Marquette, and Marcus Howard had like 28 in the first half, finished with like 42, totally like dominated the game. He was one of like those like just great college players that like,
yeah,
he could do whatever he wanted on the court, and it just seemed like it was just so natural to him. It would be like a floater, a three, a step back, a mid-range two. Like, any shot he wanted in the game, he could get it. Him and Miles Powell, I always say, are the best college players that I've ever played against, just because the amount of attention that we put on our scouting report to them and the way they were still able to get off, have great games, and carry their teams. It's just, I don't envy guys like Buddy last year, right? Like, especially, like, playing against Villanova and some of these other teams. Like, you're the top guy every single night, and you're still able to carry your teams, do it efficiently.
Yeah.
Marcus Howard was like a 50-40-90 guy for like three straight years.
Dude, he was like ridiculous. I remember watching him against, I think it was Buffalo. He had 5 points at halftime. And then, like, you look at the end of the game and he had 45 points. Like, he just scored 40 in the second half.
He's one of those guys that, like, no matter what, like, Scotty's like this a little bit too. Like, he'll have 2 points at halftime and then he'll find a way to get like 24.
Yeah.
It's just like some of these guys, especially like the main ball handlers, the guys who like have the ball in their hands the whole entire game. You got to think about it. They're shooting the free throws at the end of the game, like GMAC used to talk about.
Yep.
So you're up. So that's like 6 points right there.
Yeah.
Like Scotty's getting like 3 or 4 fast break layups, and then he'll get fouled like on a random play in the bonus, and just go to the line and have like he'll have like 14 points off of free throws, and then just like 10 points throughout the game.
Yeah.
And it's just like that. Such an easy 24 for him.
Still counts, though. I mean, you're just finding points throughout the game. Like, that's like the biggest part of being a scorer.
Oh, Coach Boeheim used to say all the time to me and Buddy, it's like, Chris Mullin shot 10 shots a game, but averaged 25 points a game. He would get to the free throw line 15 times a game. Mm-hmm. And he'd make 14 out of 15, 15 out of 15, and then make six or seven of his 10 shots and end up with 25 to 30 points.
Yeah. GMAC used to always say that too. He's like, I played a lot of bad basketball in this uniform, but I'd always get 16. But, I mean, speaking of GMAC, giant win for the Orange this weekend.
It was
in South Bend. Actually, real quick before we get into this, I've talked a lot about my Notre Dame fandom for football. That does not translate to basketball at all. I'm not even blowing smoke here. I've actually never been. I never like hated Notre Dame basketball, but I was never much of a fan. So obviously on Saturday, if there's any questions about what I'm pulling for, it's easily the Orange all the way.
For sure. No, but that was such a classic Boeheim win. Like,
yep.
Lose so many tough games in a row. Everyone's counting you out. Your worst team in Syracuse history. Whatever. But whatever. Like, all the narratives that's been placed around the program. And then you go at Notre Dame, a team who just beat Michigan State by 20.
Yeah, they have everything going for them.
6-1, have the 7th most efficient offense in college basketball. Like, have 5 shooters against the zone. Oh, like, they're gonna blow us out. They have shooting.
Yeah.
Then we go and we beat them on the road, and we don't shoot the ball well. Like, one quick shout out. I got to give a quick shout out to Joe Girard. I mean,
yeah, I was gonna get to that.
Talking about the scrutiny, I mean, Joe's received more scrutiny than anyone else this year.
Mm-hmm.
He has a big game against Richmond, and then he has a couple bad shooting games, and everyone writes him off. And I talked to Joe, and his mindset was just to keep going. You know what I mean? And that's what GMAC used to always tell us, and Coach always preaches to us. And then he goes out and has 20, looks confident, is shooting the basketball, tough shots, and making tough shots, and finding Jesse, running the team, contesting every single shot on the perimeter, making sure he's getting in there for his 5 rebounds.
Yeah.
All over the court. So just a big shout-out to Girardi, Joe Girard.
Yeah, friend of the pod. Very good friend of ours. I was dangerously close to, like, responding to people on Twitter last week seeing some of the Girard hate. It's, like, actually insane. Like, after the Illinois game, it's like, I don't know.
You know what's ridiculous? You know what's ridiculous? Mike Waters put out a tweet, like, saying the joke became, like, the 20th all-time leading scorer in Syracuse basketball history.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So, like, think about all the great players that have been to Syracuse. And there was this one guy who goes, for all the points he scored in high school, this hasn't really lived up to the expectations that we had.
What do you want him to do?
I'm like,
yeah.
What?
Yeah.
He's about to score probably 1,600 points in a Syracuse jersey.
100%.
He averaged 12.5 points a game as a freshman, kept up as a sophomore, kept it up as a junior, is the leading scorer on the team now. He's the disrespect of the level of college basketball and how hard it is to be a really good ACC player at Syracuse with all the scrutiny and being the only show in town. It was just mind-boggling. And Mike Waters put out a good tweet, too. He was like, yeah, but you got to think about it. He played with Buddy Boeheim.
Yeah.
Who was the ACC leading scorer. Elijah Hughes was the ACC leading scorer. Mm-hmm. And then he's played with just other great players. So it's like, that tweet just got
so frustrating. Upset. Yeah, I saw one that was like, I'm not lying, I've played pickup with players better than Joe Girard. Like, are you kidding me? No, you haven't. You simply haven't. Like, Girard could play lefty against whoever that guy was and all his boys, and he would completely obliterate them. Like, that was just, it's mind-boggling how good everyone at that level is. So, like, to disrespect anyone who's at, it's not like, yeah, he had a couple games where he struggled. He's still averaging 15 points a game. Like,
I have no respect for people like that. And I just, and just to see the work that he puts in every single day to get the disrespect, it's like, if people knew half the stuff that he did, then they would have no, they couldn't even say anything on Twitter. So,
yeah.
Well, I mean, it's a part of being a college basketball player. It's a part of playing at Syracuse. We're blessed to have the fans. I mean, Syracuse has the best fan base in the country. I truly believe that. You go on the road to any venue in the Bahamas, the place was full. In Maui, the place is full. Mm-hmm. At the MSG, it feels like a Syracuse home game. Like, it's just, it's like Syracuse Mafia. You know what I mean? It's just orange all over the garden. So if you can't tell, we're pretty passionate Syracuse guys, and and we're Girardi homers.
Yeah, no, we're complete homers. But I mean, it's just good analysis. However, I mean, you never want to look ahead in college basketball, but their schedule
pretty favorable schedule.
Yeah, they could get to, I don't know, 9-5, 10-4 here. They're currently at 4-4, but the diehard Syracuse fans will remember this. That's why that reminded me of our win at Florida State last year.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. Same exact time of year. Kind of same exact position where it's like, we need a win really bad. No one expects us to get a win. And like you said, we classic just Boeheim win. Bang.
It's almost like that Indiana win, too. It's like, no one expects us to win. We're coming off a tough Bahamas stretch where we lost to two really, really good teams. VCU was on the bubble the whole entire year. Auburn was the number one team in the country the whole entire year. So you can say those are two bad losses, whatever. And then we come home. We beat a really good Indiana team. Then at the time, Florida State was getting votes for the top 25. We beat Florida State on the road.
Yeah.
And then we have that momentum going into the game at the Garden against Villanova. And obviously, it was a tough one there. But, I mean, just typical Boeheim win. I tweeted after the game.
That was a good tweet.
Super excited. Yeah. Boeheim with the goat emojis. I mean, Boeheim loves it. Boeheim loves being doubted because every single year he just proves everyone wrong.
Yeah. I've talked to you this.
You think we stink? Sweet 16.
I've talked to you about this off camera, but I think you and Elijah Hughes are maybe the number one and two former Hughes players on Twitter right now. Just firing off a little proud of the guys, little orange emoji. I don't know.
Yeah.
2,000 tweets, easy. Yeah.
Elijah's great. Elijah's so consistent. Yeah. I gotta get to his level, but
I'm not a big
Twitter guy. I watch every game too. I'm not a big tweet guy. Like, I'll never tweet unless it's about Syracuse or if my sisters are doing something well or something like that. But or my little brother. But yeah, man, I mean, man. I just got hyped up a little bit about the Cuse, man.
Yeah, it was just an unbelievable one. I was just thrilled. But the other thing we always want to check in on every week, Swire, how are you feeling? How's the rehab going? I know you're getting back on the court now like you promised last week, but if you want to fill the listeners in.
Yeah, man, so today was actually the first day where I got to go back and play live. So
full practice, Swire. Yep.
Yeah. Got to go back and play 2-on-2 with some of the guys. And we're doing a lot of non-contact stuff. We're taking it slow. I mean, it's one of those things where you can't rush it. As frustrating as it is sometimes, you can't rush it. So just every single day, just inching closer and closer. First game back is going to be December 14th, so really excited about that. Obviously, I have the minimum restrictions and all that. But just super excited the opportunity to play, get back out on the court. It felt good today. I mean, I felt like I was moving in quicksand a little bit. Just as I haven't moved like this in 8 weeks.
Right, yeah.
But at the same time, just super blessed, super excited just to keep on working, keep on getting better. And you know me, I'm a big process guy. So
right.
A little bit of work doesn't scare me, and I'm excited to get back out there.
Yeah, it's awesome. It's got to be the best feeling in the world. But I don't know if we said it on the mics last week, but don't you have a target date at this point? I don't know if you're allowed to say that, but maybe some breaking news from the Swider Show.
Yeah, December 14th is going to be my debut.
Huge.
So super excited for that.
Yeah. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Swider Show. We'll be maybe we'll put out some special content for your return. Maybe we'll whip up a reel or something. Adam, yeah, that maybe. Sound good? All right, Adam gave us a thumbs up. So yeah, we'll chef something up. By we, I mean simply Adam. But
yeah,
we'll get something going for that.
The goat.
But yeah, happy to hear that. Sheridan's not here, so we currently don't have a stat of the week.
Shocker.
Sheridan's out, but what are we getting? Oh, we got a. I don't know if the listeners don't care about this, but I will be in town. Swider, I'll be at the Cuse game on Saturday, Georgetown, 1 p.m. I'm going with my parents. My dad's a huge Pearl Washington fan. He was his favorite player growing up, so he's going into the Ring of Honor.
So, yeah.
Yeah, it should be fun. Should be a good ceremony.
Speaking of the Ring of Honor, obviously amazing that Coach Boeheim is historic, whatever, but I saw Hakeem Warwick last night at we played against Gigi Kennedy last night. So got to talk to him, got to see him, got to just be around and be in his presence, and he's an unbelievable guy. He reminds me a lot of Demetrius Nichols, just soft-spoken, super dedicated to the craft, and a big, big Syracuse guy. You know what I mean? Him and Jason Hart were talking about Syracuse, talking about the guys. And then James Sutherland too. So it was just like it was a great Syracuse kind of night for me, being around those guys. It was great. So, but Hakeem Warwick, I don't know if this is breaking news, but he said he's going to get the jersey's going to be retired the last game of the season.
So, yeah, March 4th. Yeah, I'll be there.
Yeah. So
I'll be in the house. That's awesome.
But yeah, he was great. He was out there working with the guys and getting out there early and just. Typical Syracuse guy, just a grinder.
Yep, a lot of loyalty there too. The brotherhood, I know, not
so much loyalty.
Actually, fuck that. Not the brotherhood. That's what Duke says. But I don't know, some other term. Cuse family. How about that? Nice orange emoji. Know what's insane though? You know what's? I found this out last year when I was on the team. You know the orange emoji is actually tangerine. Like the orange,
it's the orange.
It's, no, the orange emoji, but it's technically a tangerine, which is just devastating. But I just choose to not believe that. Although it does have a stem, so it kind of makes sense that it's a tangerine. But I don't know. Screw that. Like whenever we get a big recruit, just tweet out orange emoji, but it's technically a tangerine. But
yeah, and it's always the orange or the tangerine emoji and the orange heart.
Yeah.
Great combo.
Orange heart is great combo. But maybe one of these weeks the mailbag question of the week will be what's your favorite emoji? I think that would be bad. Yeah, but now that we've finished our emoji segment of the week, as far as the rest of the show, we're excited to give you this Patty Casey-less interview with Noah Gray. I'm sure the listeners, you know, there might be some that are happy to hear that. Let me button in, you know what I mean? However, I think there's a lot of loyal listeners that are devastated. So
I mean, half our listeners are Scranton people, so they're probably sick and tired of hearing me. But
no, they'll be tuned in for sure. But yeah, like I said, excited to give you guys this. I'm sorry, Swider. I'm sorry, Adam. I'm sorry, listeners, that I couldn't be there. But from all accounts, it was a great interview. Noah is the man. He's really working his way into a lot more packages. He's getting more of a look with the Chiefs, hitting his stride more here. And being with the Chiefs is not the worst thing. So I'm excited to watch him against the Eagles in the Super Bowl. And likewise, I'm excited for you guys to listen to this interview. So, Swire, if you want to sign off, we'll see you guys next week.
Yeah, man. Great interview with Noah, and I'm really excited for you guys to listen to it. And obviously, go Orange, go Lakers, and we'll be talking to you guys next week. First off, I'd like to say thank you to my man Noah Gray for coming on the show. It's been a while, Noah, but happy to have you on, man. How you been?
I'm good, man. I appreciate you having me, dog. This is fun. This is cool, man.
Yeah, man. So it's actually been probably since... Actually, no. On my official visit to Duke, we hung out a little bit. But yeah, it's been a while since I saw you. So it's, you got a lot to catch up on, man.
Yeah, man. When did we play together? We played AU, what, 6th or 7th grade together?
Yeah, 7th grade, 8th grade, Nationals. So it's been a crazy journey since, man. Look where we are now.
Dude, it's cool, man. I was hyped for you, dude. Like, when you got drafted, or, I mean, when you came out, and because you were at Villanova for a little bit, right? Yeah. And then you went to Syracuse for your last year. Yeah, man. I was hyped for you. I would always follow you, bro, because I didn't, you know, I don't remember a whole lot of guys. Like, I think you're the only guy that I actually, like, played with. And we only played for that one tournament, but, like, actually went on to play in the NBA. And I was playing a lot of basketball when I was younger. So, like, I thought it was pretty cool when you came out and, you know, now you're playing for the Lakers, dude. So that's pretty sweet, man.
Yeah, man. Appreciate it. So, I mean, first off, just how you feeling? How's the season going for you? I mean, I know in the NFL, the injuries are crazy. So how you holding up?
I'm great, man. Yeah, it's a long season going from like 12 games in college to 17. And they just expanded the NFL by a game last year. And then, you know, I play for the Chiefs. So, you know, I play full preseason, then we're in the playoffs and we get pretty deep. So I think last year was pretty tough just cause like it was literally almost basically two college regular seasons, in one season. You know, you play like 20 something games, like 23 games, I think I played last year, and I was a rookie. So I had to grind in preseason and, you know, I had to play a lot of minutes in those preseason games and let the vets rest. And then you just get rolling, dude. So I've been blessed though. I haven't been too dinged up. I've been pretty healthy, which has been awesome. So it's been good, man. This year's been good, and we're winning games. Unfortunately, we just lost to the Bengals last night, which is brutal. But hopefully, we'll get those guys again in the playoffs.
Yeah, man. It's a part of it though, and they tell us in professional sports all the time, like, you can't worry about one game. Like, you play so many games, like, you just gotta keep on moving on. So I can only imagine. But let's go back to middle school, man. Obviously, we played together in AAU Nationals. It's a crazy thing about now. But what made you fall in love with football, and what made you choose football over basketball? Because, I mean, a lot people from around the area know, but you probably could have been a Division I basketball player if you stuck to it.
Nah, definitely not. I appreciate that, though, man. I appreciate that. I think when you joined our AAU squad, for that one tournament, I think it was down in Florida. Like, I don't know, there's just a lot of perspective there. Like, you know, I'm not the tallest dude, you know, and like I was playing power forward. You know what I mean? Like, and I'm 6'3". So it's like, I think a little bit of realism there, you know. And don't get me wrong, basketball is like my favorite sport growing up. It's still my favorite sport. Like, I love playing pickup basketball with friends. Like, you know, between that and pickleball right now, like, that's what I grind in the off season sometimes because it's just fun, man. Like, it's a great sport. And, but like being around guys like you, being around some of those other guys, like, you just kind of be like, yeah, I'm probably not gonna make it in the sport. Like, I can't really, like, I can dunk a basketball, but I can't do it consistently. I'm not a great shooter, and I'm like the size of a guard. You know what I mean? Like, it was just kind of like, you know, I'm pretty good at football, so I'll probably just go this other route. And so I started like really getting into football. I've playing tackle football since I was like 6 years old.
Wow.
And I never stopped. And then my dad is like, hey, like, you know, you could probably play football at the next level. And he would drive me up and down the East Coast, taking me from camp to camp, trying to, you know, get in front of some college coaches. And it kind of just took off from there. I just kind of fell in love with it. And all I wanted to do was play football. So I think by the time I was like a junior in high school, I was just kind of done with the whole basketball route. And I kind of just threw everything into football. But man, I love basketball. I mean, it's nothing like it being cold outside. You get to go and play in the gym, man. That was always a great memory, for sure.
Nah, for sure, man. But when I met you, you were originally a quarterback. So talk about when you had to make that transition from quarterback to tight end, and when did you realize that in terms of you going to college, like that was going to be your best opportunity?
It's really kind of the same development as basketball. Like I would show up to these camps, and I went to Boston College for 3 years at their camp, and I would go as a quarterback. And just every year they're like, oh yeah, I just kind of want to see you develop. And I was like, all right, cool, cool, cool. And then I went down to UNC and I was playing, and I was at one of their camps, and I was actually going to go back-to-back days for them. Like UNC was my dream school, believe it or not. I went to Duke. But I was like, man, I need to go to UNC. So I went, played a little quarterback. After the camp, I went up to the quarterback coach. I'm like, hey, what do you like think? Like, should I come back tomorrow as a quarterback? But I was also thinking about maybe coming as receiver. He goes, oh yeah, definitely go as receiver. Like straight up. He's like, definitely, if you come back tomorrow, go as a receiver. Yeah. So I show back up the next day, and I get with the tight ends coach. Quarterback coach never even like made eye contact with me. Like I walked right by him in the same line. Super awkward. Like I can't even believe my dad made me do that. I think I was a sophomore in high school. But I think I realized then, I'm like, yeah, like if I actually want to do something with this beyond high school, I should probably switch positions. So then like by the time my senior year rolled around, and really I was only kind of thrown in a quarterback because like our backup quarterback in high school was a legitimate D tackle. Like the dude yeah. was like almost like I don't know, 260 pounds, like just kind of a dude that could throw the ball, but he didn't know how to play quarterback. We didn't have anyone else to play it. So I was kind of thrown into that position. And then my coach was finally just like, all right, dude, like you're going to play tight end at the next level. We might as well throw you in here for the last half of the season. You know, and I love scoring touchdowns, catching touchdowns. It was kind of a passion of mine. And like, I would go to these camps and their coaches would be like, all right, yeah, you're definitely a receiver tight end. You know, we can just throw the quarterback stuff to the side. And that's kind of the route that I took. I've always been kind of a realist about it. Like basketball, yeah. like you just realize that you're not going to be a good basketball player at the next level. And I wanted to be as successful as I can and play sports for as long as I can possible. You know, and that was just kind of like the reality of my situation, you know, growing up like that.
So going off that North Carolina camp, talk about the recruitment process of football, because obviously it's a lot different than basketball. Basketball, we get to go to tournaments, you get to go to live tournaments in July. A college coach is lined up on the sideline. In football, it's a little different. You have to go to camps. And if you can elaborate on that process a little bit, and just tell the average person at home just about that.
Yeah, so for me, because I played quarterback, there wasn't a lot of tape to base it off of. And I'm also from Massachusetts. Like, exactly. Massachusetts, you in that New England area, like New York, Mass, like it's basketball and hockey, really, and lacrosse. You know, but for football, it's a little bit different. And there's some guys like A.J. Dillon, yep. He went to Lawrence Academy, absolute dog. He's playing for the Packers right now. Great dude. You know, but like that's a guy that like his film as a running back showed that he was going to be a running back the next level. He went to camps. I remember going to some camps with him, but you know what he was doing on film, that was attractive to coaches, and coaches would literally just show up to his games and you know they'd be super excited about it, and it was great. But I played quarterback, so for me it was hard because I would talk to these coaches and like, oh yeah, but you know you're not a quarterback. And I'm like, well, I can play at the next level. I know that I can. But they're like, all right, well, you like come to camp. So like that was a big thing, like physically showing up to these camps. And my dad hated flying, like could not, like still.
Yeah, I remember that.
He struggles to get on a plane. Like when we went down to that Florida tournament in middle
school. Orlando, you guys drove, yeah.
He drove all the way down there. It was we drove straight through. Like it was like 24 hours from Massachusetts. It was awful, brutal. But like he would not fly. So he was like, all right, like, you know, I want you to, you know, get an offer. I want you to play in college. So like, let's go down. Let's create a calendar, and we're just going to go down the East Coast, and we're going to hit all these schools. So I literally drove, you know, went to Boston College. I went down, and that's when I played quarterback. Then I was done that, and then I was like, all right, we went to Temple, played just tight end. I'm like, I'm just going to sell out tight end right now, and this is going into my senior year. So yep, my junior year just finished up. So I went to Temple. And then I went to UNC tight end. I went to Duke tight end. Then I drove out to Appalachian State tight end. Well, then I started kind of like, I got an offer. I think my first offer was like UNH or something. Yeah. But UNH offered me as a tight end because I showed up to their camp as well before I started heading south. And then Temple offered me. So then I could like start telling coaches like, all right, hey, like these schools offer me as a tight end. I showed up to the camp. So then they'd be like, oh, cool. We don't have any film use at tight end. Come to our camp. So I was like, all right, cool. Went to Duke, tight end only. Duke ended up offering me like a week later. They had to vet some people at my high school as a tight end. Then I went to App State. I was like, yeah, App State never heard of me, bro. Like I had all these offers for a tight end and it was kind of growing on like the 24/7 website. But I literally, my dad drove me to App State, which is like probably 3.5 hours from Durham, North Carolina. I show up there and I run my 40. And it was pretty decent. Like, I mean, we all look stupid out there because we don't got no training. So we're just running. Oh, man, you ran like a 4.7 as a tight end. Like, that's pretty fast. Like, what's your name? I was like, oh, Noah. He's like, do you have any offers? I'm like, dude, no one has any idea who I am. So after the camp, Coach Satterfield, who I think he might get a job. Man, he might get picked up at Cincinnati now because their coach left. But he's been the coach at Louisville, but he was a coach at App State before. And he's like, hey, we're going to offer you right now. I'm like, that's crazy. So then BC actually sees that I'm getting offers from these schools. And then they're like, they're calling me. And he's like, hey, like, we just need you to come to camp and be a tight end. Like, we just need to see you. I'm like, dog, I've been to camp for 3.5 years. I've showed up 3 years. I wanted to go to BC. You guys still haven't offered me. Why am I going to go back there and run as a tight end? Like, you know, I'm an athletic dude. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know, you know, I don't know what else you want from me. So eventually I just kind of fell in love with, you know, Coach Cudd and Duke and thought it was a good fit for me. And I had schools like hit me up, hey, we just need you to come to camp. And at that time I was tired, dude. Like, I think that summer that was like, I probably had been to like 7 or 8 schools, like physically had to show up there and go through this whole 7-hour ordeal where I'm playing football, doing all this stupid 40 testing. And then like, finally they'd offer me at the end, get a call from another school. Hey, come here. All right, I'll be there. And it's like, dude, like, you know what I mean? Like some of the other schools who I've been to before is like, oh, we just need you to come here. I'm like, dog, I'm too tired, man. Like, this is a lot for some 16-year-old kid, man. So that's kind of how it went. And then Duke offered me, I fell in love and I just kind of committed there. So, and it was the best decision I ever made. And I still stand by that to this day.
Yeah, man, that process sounds crazy. And you talk about coming from Massachusetts, like there's not a whole bunch of NFL guys who came from Massachusetts. I mean, over the years, probably a couple, but I mean, one thing I get out of that is like you really worked for these scholarship offers. Like nothing was given to you. You were traveling all over the place, and I think that's one of the things that goes under the radar for some of these kids. It's like they just expect the guys to come to them. Like, no, like if you want this, you got to go and get it. And I feel like this is such a great example of like someone just going to get it. But going off of that, you said you committed to Duke. Talk about that transition to college a little bit, because obviously for me, high school to college was the biggest transition. And for you, now you're playing a position that it's the first time you're actually playing it for a consistent season. Talk about that a little bit.
Oh, man, it was hard. It was tough, especially because I had only like half of a high school season at tight end. And like the game is so much different. Oh, like you could have some of the best players in high school, and they'll show up to college and it'll be anywhere, dude, like any program. And like, they're either going to fold or they're going to, you know, take what they're learning from their coaches and they're going to run with it. And I look silly, dude. I look so silly. Like, you should have seen me try to block some of these guys, man. Like, I would pull the wrong way and run into like my own teammates. Like, I'd be trying to block a dude and just get absolutely driven back, like 5 yards in the backfield. And I was like, hey, I blocked the guy. Like, he didn't make the tackle. I'm 5 yards deep in the backfield. And the coach is like, no, what are you doing here? You know, like, it was tough for the first year, but I had some great coaches to kind of help me and guide me. You know, my first tight end coach he was actually an offensive line guy that they kind of just threw at tight end. So he was actually a huge reason into why I was able to kind of develop and like learn how to block, because I think that was the biggest thing. Like, I was athletic enough to run around and catch passes and stuff, but like blocking a dude who's 6'5 and 280, 290 pounds is just something that you need a lot of like technique for. You know, it takes a lot of technique, and then obviously you had to get a little bit bigger, a little bit stronger. So that was probably the biggest thing that I struggled with. But man, I had some dude show me some film, like a few years ago. He was like a junior when I was a freshman, and it just looks silly, bro. But that's just the way it is, bro. And it was honestly like the other tight end that came in with me felt the same way. And it's just like looking back on it now, it's like, it's funny because like it's 5 years removed, but man, it was definitely a grind. And, you know, even if you played the position, you know, for your entire life, like that transition, I mean, I'm sure, you know, in basketball, from like AU and the prep schools and stuff like that, like it's just a different animal, you know? And then from there from college to the NFL, it's like another big jump. You know what I mean? Cause then it's like, all right, you take away the school and all the time that you got to study, like, preparing for school. And then on top of like football and basketball, then it's literally just your job now. Like you do it 24/7, and there's just more details that like these coaches expect you to know. So, you know, but honestly, I was grateful to have pretty good coaches to kind of help me with that transition.
Yeah, big time, man. Going off of that, when did you know the NFL was a real possibility for you?
I think after my junior year. Like I tried not to think about it too much just because I didn't want me to get too over my head about it or be stressed about it, you know? So I think after my junior year, going into my senior year, like obviously like the Reese Senior Bowl starts to reach out to people about the watch list. And, you know, obviously if you do the Reese Senior Bowl, you don't just do that because it's like an opportunity to play one more final college game. Like it's an opportunity to interview with NFL scouts and, you know, show them how you're going to match up against some of the best guys coming out into that draft year. So, you know, once those kind of started rolling around, I was like, all right, like I got to finish this college season, you know, one more year. Unfortunately, it was the COVID year. So super weird season. But I was like, all right, like if I can just keep a good head on my shoulders, keep the same work ethic, keep that same love and passion after the game, like, you know, hopefully this can roll over into the NFL and make a career out of it.
You had a big junior year, 51 catches, 392 yards, 3 touchdowns. And then you talk about the senior year, you have a new quarterback who's Chase Bryce, who actually ended up at App State, and you don't have the same production, but you had second team All ACC the year before, second team All American. And then going into draft night, what were your expectations going into draft night? Because I know for me, it was all over the place. This team said they were going to draft me. That team said they were going to draft me. This team said they were going to give me whatever, these contracts. Talk about your expectations going into draft night and what that night was like.
Yeah, so, you know, I tried to stay very mellow and level-headed about it. Like, for me, I was like, I'm just going to think worst case scenario, I'm going to go undrafted. Like you said, like, there's a big dip of my numbers. And, like, looking back on it, I didn't know how much that factored into it. Like, I didn't know. It's like, all right, the stats went down. Like, and I got a lot of questions about that during the pre-draft process. Like, hey, what do you think was wrong? And they're trying to get me to, like, bash, you know, the
outside.
Yeah. And I never did. And I never will. You know what I mean? Like, we went like 2-9 that season. Our only wins was Syracuse and like Charlotte, you know, and like they were just as bad as we were, you know? So like it was tough because I was like, man, like I wasn't the same, like same Noah quote unquote as I was my junior year. But you know, I felt like as long as I go in and super positive and I kill these interviews and show them that I'm a pretty smart dude in terms of football, you know, I'll be all right. And, you know, if I don't go drafted, you know, that's fine. Like I'll, you know, I pray that I'll get picked up by a team and I'll be able to show them what I got when it comes training camp time. And fortunately for me, the Chiefs drafted me, and, you know, I'm for the rest of my life, I'll be forever grateful. Cause I don't think if I went to another team, especially early on in my career, I don't think I'd be the same player that I am today.
Yeah.
You know, like having Kels and having guys like Pat and like the coaches that we do in Kansas City has been like huge. Like I never thought I'd know this much about football, you know, and they fortunately was drafted in the 5th round there. And, you know, that was over exceeding my expectation though, you know, cause I was like, man, undrafted, cool. Like, I'm just going to get an opportunity. And then I got the call from KC and, you know, rest is history. I'm 2 years in now. We're just having fun, man.
That was my next question. I mean, for me, I have this same kind of like these legends, you know what I mean? Anthony Davis, LeBron James, Russell Westbrook, and then you go into a team that's ready to win a championship now, and then you're with Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce, two of the best players in the NFL now. Travis Kelce's probably the one or two greatest tight end of all time, either him or Gronk. And then Patrick Mahomes is headed that way towards being a quarterback. Talk about learning from those guys, because I know for me it's been a big part of my rookie years, just learning from these all-time greats.
Dude, it's like a legit blessing. Like an absolute, like, I will forever be super thankful that, you know, Coach Reed and Brett Veach, you know, they drafted me to Kansas City, because like I said, I would not be the same player. Kels is like, I get people come to me and say, oh, is Kels like a cocky dude? Is he just like, you know, he's the vet in the room. He's one of the greatest. Like, does he just keep to himself? Man, he is the most like outgoing, humble, just awesome type of teammate guy that you could have in a locker room. Like that dude, like during OTAs, which is just kind of like these small little practices that we have. It's 7-on-7, some individual drill, and then you're out of there. But that dude would like get done his rep and he would like watch like Jody, me, some of the other tight ends who are trying to make it. And like he would come back with feedback like after every play. And I was like, man, that's crazy. Like this dude, amazing. Like you said, he's going to go down as one of the greatest tight ends of all time. Yeah, I think he's the best. Obviously, I'm.
Yeah, little bias.
I think he's the best, man. And like, you know, to have a dude in the locker room that cared that much about what I was doing in OTAs, and then have like see him consistently do that, like literally my entire 2 years that I've been in Kansas City, like that is something that was so like crazy to me. But like, I was like, man, I'm just so thankful that he's giving me the help. Like, I'm thankful that, you know, he's teaching me how to run a deep cross a different way versus cover three in quarters. Like,
yeah.
To have that kind of insight into what he's thinking, like, that is so huge, bro. Because when I go out there, like, I can kind of, like, you know, it just gives me more information and more knowledge to be able to go execute my assignment. You know, our offense, like, there's a lot of different ways to run a lot of different routes. And, like, I've heard some other organizations and from coming from college, like you ran a basic cross one way and this is how you ran it. And like here, it's like, man, this coverage, you run it like this. And if you see this or this happen, then you speed it, like stuff like that. I'm like, dude, you don't just like learn that. Like it takes time and years, and yeah. Who else had that? And he's literally like still to this day, he continues to help me, help Jody, help all the guys in that room. And, you know, help us be better, and we're a better tight end unit for it, dude. And you know, and in terms of Pat, you know, Pat's Pat, you know, he's a winner. And you know, having that mindset and having a guy like that that just cares so much about the game, man, it's been an absolute blessing to play with those guys. You know, the one thing I will say is they're just great teammates, and I'm just very fortunate to play. I'm sure you feel that way with the guys that are in LA with you right now, but it's just it's awesome being around a culture like that.
Going off the NFL, just talk about a typical NFL day, week, because I think a lot of like people don't know you guys are in there from 7 a.m. to 9 p.m. on most days. Can you just talk about that? Just give the normal person a little inside look.
Yeah, I mean that's pretty much that's it. We're not till 9 though. Like we're probably is that y'all schedule in LA?
Definitely not us, man.
I was about to say, man, that's crazy. 7 to 9, dude. I mean, I don't even know. Oh man, and you got like 85 games. I mean, we have Monday off, so I'm chilling right now. Yeah. Tuesday we'll go and watch a little film and do a little lift and stuff like that. And so Monday and Tuesday is pretty chill. And then I think Wednesday through Friday is like the days where it's like we're in there watching film. We got practice, you know, we got some other things and we got meetings after. So we're probably in there from like, I know, like 8 o'clock to 5 in the afternoon.
Yeah.
You know, those days. And then Saturdays is kind of like a tempo down day. We're just kind of finalizing some things about the game plan. And Sunday we're playing. You know, and it's definitely tedious, especially during like a 18-week schedule. Like I said earlier, it's like we're in Kansas City, we're going to be in the playoffs, and we got preseason. Coach Reed loves to practice as hard, you know, and I love that. You know, I think like I'm a big believer in practice, you know, big believer in you know, going out there and getting game speed reps. You know, and we I think Coach Reed does it the right way. So it's definitely long. It's tedious, but at the end of the day, like, you and I were playing kid sports. And yeah. I think that's what I try to, like, I try to take the money out of it. Like, I try not to think about, like, the contract or, you know, getting paid every week. Like, I just try to focus on, man, I'm playing a kid's sport and this is supposed to be fun, you know? And I think at the beginning of my rookie year, like, it kind of got tough there because, like, you know, I'm still trying to figure some things out. You know, the game is still pretty, it's still very fast. I don't care what anyone says, NFL is fast. You know, and it's just like there's a lot of information being thrown at you, and then you got to go out and play full speed. And I just felt like I wasn't fully comfortable yet, like midway through my rookie year. But I was like, oh, but you know, whatever. Like, I'm getting paid, and I think I needed to change that mindset a little bit because, like, it just made the season feel so much longer. And like this year, yeah. I came in, I was like, dude, I just need to have fun with it. I'm playing a kid sport. Let's go out and like act like it's a kid sport. Because if I can have fun doing this, like, you know, I can do this all day, all year. And, yeah, too. I think that mindset kind of like helped me like this year. Like I love doing what I'm doing. Like, I love going out there, playing with those guys, being around those guys. And then we're a winning organization. So, you know, winning is a lot of fun. And, you know, but I do think that mindset's kind of helped me out, especially with how long the season's been.
Big time, man. I mean, like, I can just say from me and you, we're just extremely blessed to be in these situations, and going off of that, just, how important has your faith been on this journey for you?
Oh, so important. Man, all glory to God, dude. And I mean that sincerely. And I actually, so like, I would always say I was, you know, a big believer growing up. But, you know, when I got to Kansas City, I got drafted here. I came out here. My mom was like, hey, I actually have a friend who I grew up with. But she met this guy and he actually planted a church in Kansas City. I was like, oh, really? Like, that's crazy. Like, cool. So I didn't know anyone in Kansas City. So when I got here, I was like, oh, I should probably make some connections. And so I was like, all right, like, I should probably go to the church to, like, you know, meet them because it's, you know, respectful and stuff like that. And yeah. I wasn't consistently going to church or consistently, like, all about that in my faith. Like, I was pretty immature. But after, like, I had met him, like, him and his family and that church community helped me out so much. And then from there, I was like, man, I got to ask questions. I got to continue figuring this out. And then, you know, I ended up getting baptized like 3 months after that, after talking with him and being a part of that community. And man, let me tell you, like, the faith, you know, faith in our Savior, man, it's taken a lot of weight off my shoulders. Like, when things are stressful, when, you know, last year, my rookie year, like, we weren't winning all the time in our first, like, half of the season. We were up and down, like, we were a 500 team for the first like 8-9 games. And you know, it just kind of like helped like relax me and be like, man, this isn't about me, you know, this is something that's a lot bigger than me. Like, I'm not here on my own. And I never really viewed that about football, which I think is why I was so stressed all the time in high school. Like, man, I gotta get to college, I gotta do this, this, and this, you know. And like, when I was in college, like, man, I gotta do this and this to get to the NFL when I got time in my junior year. And you know, so I think like having that faith and being like, man, like, I'm just going to give all my stress to God. I'm going to let him take that, you know, and I'm just going to work hard and do the things that he gave me and utilize all the talents he gave me and glorify him doing so. And honestly, dude, it's taken a lot of stress off my shoulders, especially going into year two.
Yeah, man, that's amazing. I know me and you were very outspoken on social media of just how good God is, you know what I mean? This is after my sophomore year at Villanova, I totally transformed my mindset of just believing, doing right by God, and he's taking care of us for sure, man. Like I said, I'm just super, super proud of you, man. Obviously, it's been a great interview and podcast, and I'll always be rooting for you, my guy.
Oh, man, I'll be rooting for you too, brother, man. I'm excited for you to get back and get on the court this year, man.
Yes, sir, man. Appreciate it. Noah Gray signing off.